Loring gave Valentine a quick lesson on how and when to lean in turns, where to put his feet when they stop the bike, and what to do in case of attack.
Hug me like an ass bandit! You come off, I'm not turning around!
Loring negotiated the big woolly bushes and dry washes with a good deal of skill. All they disturbed were Rabbit, whose ping-pong ball tails bounced away from the bike's noisy exhaust, and Roadrunners.
Practically ringing the dinner bell for the Jaguars, you know.
They reached the crash site perhaps 2 hours after the pilot had set down. Judging from the tire tracks, he'd made a good job of the landing, snapping off a few taller cacti until the right under-engine landing gear hit a rock. The gear hadn't broken, but it bounced the plane up, and the right wingtip caught and spun it, and once the nose struck, it was all over. The rugged frame of the aircraft, though thick with patched bullet holes, had stood up to even the pancake. Wings and tail were still intact. They made a slow circle of the wreck. Valentine cocked his head to admire the nose art. A girl in an abbreviated red uniform, fighting to keep the front of her skirt down, rode a rocket pointed toward the nose gear.
Wonder if they got him already.
I don't see any tracks. Anyone in there?
Valentine saw a pair of bloody fingerprints below one of the windows, which was also marked with upside-down letters reading Milkman. He stuck his head in and looked at the field of gauges and controls. He smelled blood, strong now. Cargo netting filled the rear of the plane, mostly empty, save for a couple of battered crates and strewn duffel bags. He smelled a sweet odor and traced it to a broken jar of preserved plums and syrup resting against a big water bottle and a mouth tube. An open camera case with a body and a long lens inside rested on the roof.
There's some bags of cargo here and a camera.
Valentine pulled the camera case out and inspected the prize. It looked quite valuable.
You want to check for salvage?
Rocket rails.
Hmm?
On the bottom of the wings. This thing's built to carry rockets, and they've been fired a lot. Let's get out of here. Let the collab choke out here.
Valentine made a slow circuit of the plane. The ground was rocky and... blood on the air.
Pilot's keeping close to his ship, but hiding. Sensible if his friends come looking for him.
Valentine approached the bike.
He's still in the area.
If you say so. I'm dusting off. You coming, Argent?
I want to meet this guy.
Shit. You said there were bags of stuff?
Yes.
Give me one.
Loring unwrapped a bungee cord from his handlebar. Valentine retrieved an ordinary-looking service duffel. It contained a rolled-up sleeping mat and spare blankets. He watched while Loring took off his leather jacket, zipped it on the upright duffel, then placed it in the saddle behind him. He whipped the bungee around it and fixed it at his belly button.
From a distance, it'll look like we're still riding together. Maybe the Jaguars will chase me instead of hunt you. Pip's gold isn't worth your life, Max.
No.
Hope you make it back to the road, then, Samaritan.
Ride free. Give this camera to Lautenberg. Maybe you and he can split the proceeds of the sale. Thank you from me.
Hey up. Keep on God's good side.
Valentine ducked back into the shadow of the plane and watched Loring move off. He dropped into a crouch and prepared to hunt. Valentine followed his nose uphill about 100 yards. It was no more than one or two telltale drops of blood, but it told Valentine everything he needed to know. Surveying the area, he spotted a thick stand of barrel-shaped cacti. Wild sheep dotted the mountain slopes above, feeding on the grasses and the wind-sheltered washes. The flyer had chosen his vantage well. It offered a good view of the wreck and the mountainside. Valentine sat down on a flat-topped rock about 10 feet away from the cactus and opened a bag of dried fruit. He rinsed his mouth out, then extracted a couple of apple chips.
You want some? This is a nasty patch of ground, Flyboy. You're not gonna like the natives. On the other hand, they're gonna be happy as hell to meet you. What I can't figure out is what they do with the eyes. Eyes don't keep. Do they eat them as soon as they pull them out? Maybe with a little salt like a hard-boiled egg? Or do they carry around a jug of brine? Option 3 is me. I'm just interested in the reward on the back of your jacket. I'm sure you know the wording by heart. It's a win for both of us. You get to be alive, and I get my money. Yahey.
The man emerged from behind the cactus stand, a bloody bandage on his hand and a good-sized swelling on his head. He had the blonde good looks of an old magazine cover model. Powerful shoulders tested the limits of his jumpsuit, and a brown leather jacket of the type Valentine had last seen outside Dallas was tied around his waist.
You could have said so to begin. Navajo or Apache?
Neither. Max Argent.
Equality Hornbreed.
Come again?
Equality Hornbreed. First name was Good Politics. My janitors were all about good politics.
Your ribs intact.
It's the pollen. Spring allergies. I can walk all night if I have to. Got a headache that about has me cross-eyed is all.
I think I got some aspirin.
Took a couple, thanks. Grab the medical kit first thing.
Your friends know you went down?
They do. Everyone was low on fuel, end of the leg. Guess no one had the guts to try a set-down to pick me up. Strict rules about that. We lose too many ships. The strip we're heading for is just a temp, though. No pickup helicopter. There's a couple parked at Yuma, so I might be on my own until tomorrow.
Hurt the hand on landing?
Nah. Planted it on some broken glass. Otherwise, I'd offer you a candied plum. Didn't look when I unhooked. I smelled smoke and was worried I was on fire.
You armed?
Pistol and my flare gun. Want me to turn them over to you?
Can I look at the offer on the jacket again?
The wording hadn't changed, nor had the logo of a rattlesnake with dragon wings flying open-mouthed toward the viewer. Colorful mission patches and squadron insignia, a hairy pirate face with a classic skull and bones cap appealed, decorated the sleeves and pockets.
Let's see where you've been camped out.
Valentine walked behind the cacti. Hornbreed had a blanket spread out with a big water jug, a signaling mirror with a hole in the center, and a fire starter. Valentine made a slow survey of the valley below them with his binoculars. Nothing. Of course, that didn't mean the jaguars weren't approaching. There was ample cover in the dry washes and brush.
You picked a good spot.
I've had to set down before. Never flipped my bird, though. I'm sure the squadron's having a good laugh. That's a nice rifle.
Steyr Scout.
Hope I don't have to see it in action.
We got two options of quality. Wait for your friends to show, or try to make it to the interstate you passed over. There's a convoy that'll be passing through at first light tomorrow. We can hitch up with them and drop off at the next crossroads and make for Yuma.
We'll be easier to pick out if we move. I'm supposed to stay with my ship unless I have to evade.
Well, the jaguars...
There are jaguars in this valley? I thought they'd cleared out.
Change your mind?
No. Generally, it's best to wait for help to arrive.
Well, I'm not one for waiting. But you know your flyers.
There are more pilots than there are operational ships. But I'm a wing leader. My pilots will come.
I like your confidence.
Stay put and wait. I was a youth vanguard leader up Provo way. Worked my way up from larva to scout ant to warrior guard. We'd go out on squat clearance, burning old homes and buildings outside of town, finding hidden livestock and fields. One time we came on, sheesh, I don't know what to call it. I guess a pilgrimage. 1,000 people or more on foot heading for California, hauling stuff on bicycles and handcarts. Our leader decided to follow them, see what they were up to. We just walked up and asked where they were going. They got rounded up, of course, and... boy, did we hear it from the churchmen when they found us dogging the column. They kicked the leader right out of the vanguard. Worked out for me, though. I was the one who argued that we'd been told to burn down houses and we shouldn't go mixing with dead feet. Were you in the vanguard?
I grew up off the grid, more or less. I did help teach in a churchman's one-room schoolhouse.
Valentine surveyed the area as he spoke. His eyes caught a brief flurry of bouncing brown balls. By the time he could focus his eyes, though... the mite bees had vanished into an arroyo. Definite movement at the wreck now. Through field glasses, Valentine watched a scout explore.
Well, the jaguars are at your wreck.
Hornbreed shrugged. The scout entered the overturned craft, which tipped a little as his weight changed its center of balance. A minute later, he emerged again, eating from the broken jar of plums. With the sun now fully behind the mountains, the desert flats turned blue. The clouds above warmed into reds, golds, and pinks and purples. Valentine decided he could get used to desert country sunsets, but he kept his attention on the wreck as more jaguars converged on the crash site. It looked like they were tearing the little ship apart, salvaging everything from bits of wire to the seat covers. Hornbreed took one brief look and handed the glasses back.
Savages. I can't watch anymore.
A jaguar in much longer furs, cut about his shoulders like a cape made of animal tails, with a spotted headband around his forehead and furry-trimmed sandals, got the other's attention. Valentine watched as he gestured toward the mountains. The tribesmen formed a staggered line like well-trained recruits and hustled away with a glance or two behind. Valentine couldn't help but turn and look at the darkening peaks behind.
What you know about these mountains?
Some farms and ranches on the other side. Pretty well organized. Typical Astlan stuff. There are collar towers below the ridgeline. They're easy to spot from the air.
Collar towers?
Keeps the peons on their ranchos. The collars tighten if they start to stray. Top quality Korean electronics.
What about this side?
Sheep, mud pueblos. Oh, long bad day. I'm going to try to sleep off this headache.
Should we set a watch?
You're my rescuer. If anything's going to happen, it'll happen whether we set a watch or not. They outnumber us 20-2. Sheesh. You wouldn't know it to hear me, but I am a healthy specimen. Just spring air.
Valentine dozed, sitting cross-legged with his rifle against his lap, small of his back pressed up against a sun-heated rock. The air had turned cold with astonishing speed, a desert feature he was still getting used to. The moon came up, so bright it looked as though an artist had painted it on the sky with radium. Valentine opened his eyes, though he couldn't say why. He came up to one knee.
Hornbreed. Hornbreed.
Valentine touched the sword at his back, tested the slide of the blade in its sheath.
Hornbreed!
Grabbing his pack, Valentine advanced, well clear of the bushes. No sign of the pilot. A white packet shone in the moonlight. Hornbreed had picked a sandy spot for easier burial. Valentine studied Hornbreed's footprints, placed in the expected position to either side of his, well, with a mule deer it would be called spoor. The white packet was a little cardboard-banded issue of field hygiene paper, courtesy of High Sierra Paper Products. No body, no sign of the jaguars, and no reaper. Strange divots stood out in the sand here and there, like little craters, near-perfect circles. If they were tracks, only an unusually hard-stepping big cat like a mountain lion would make them. But there were no drag marks away from the boot heels and teepee. $10,000 in gold, and more importantly, a key to the mercenary pilots of Pip's Flying Circus, had been spirited away without a sound or a cry of distress. Valentine felt a cold sweat that had nothing to do with the Arizona night. It occurred to him that he'd been meaning to ask Hornbreed why they called him Milkman. Something glittered in the night a few feet away. Valentine knelt, saw loose coins scattered in the rocks and sand. They were $5 pieces, marked Astcon. He'd seen them before, in plastic baggies holding Texas Quisling prisoners' possessions. He'd been told the coin was good over much of the southwest and northern Mexico. Valentine guessed that Hornbreed, literally taken with his pants down, had lost whatever change was rattling around in his pants. At least now he could guess in which direction the mysterious tracks went. The lack of blood gave him some hope. As he followed the tracks, there were other signs. The creature must have been of some size, at least that of a small tractor. It had snapped off cactus stems in several spots over 2 meters apart. It also left an odor, vaguely musty and yet ammoniacal. He traced the source of the smell, an object that looked like a little hollow reed thorn in a vaguely green-brown polished turtle shell color. Some sticky material coated one end, and Valentine hazarded a guess that it was a quill or spine. Had a giant Arizona porcupine made off with Hornbreed? The trail led Valentine up into the mountains, and the musty ammonia smell grew stronger with every step. He realized that the dark of the mountainside had a darker spot. It was a cave opening, shaped like one of the little lateen sails he'd seen on fishing boats in the Caribbean. Valentine looked around, got his bearings, and listened to the cave mouth. Valentine went flat, his senses sparking like a downed line. There were 3 grogs emerging from the cave, heavy sacks across their shoulders. They waited, standing back to back, and Valentine felt a fresh chill. Through the shadows, Valentine could barely make out the Reaper carrying a long staff that made the robed figure a scarecrow caricature of a desert prophet. It followed the Grogs on a westward leading path. The sensible thing to do would be to hotfoot it back to the convoy, leave these mountains crawling with assorted enemies, and let fate have its way with the fatalistic Hornbreed. Duvalier, had she been with him this trip, would no doubt be resting in some hidey hole with a good view of the interstate, waiting for the roar of truck engines and the rumble of tires. But damn it, he needed Hornbreed, and the promised reward, provided Flying Circus would be willing to negotiate, not amount, but kind. Valentine extracted a small, tough flashlight from his pack. It had a clip that allowed him to hang it on a pocket or attach it to the underside of his gun. Something in him had to know. He fixed the light to his carbine, coaxing himself into making the attempt by getting his gear ready. If he squatted here much longer, he'd freeze up and come up with more reasons not to try it. A big metal locker, whose door must have been the source of the clang he'd heard earlier, stood just inside the cave. Electrical cable ran down the top of the cave and into it. The locker was fixed by a simple bolt. The inside reeked of grog sweat. Long objects like fishing poles rested there, six of them. Thick handles fitted into sockets and a battery case where the reel normally stood. Valentine read the pictograms on the poles, saw the electrical insulation. They were like overlong cattle prods. Valentine lifted one up and blue LED bulbs lit up at the end. They offered just enough light for him to see a few feet into the cave, which sloped down precipitously. Someone had tacked down rubber mats to improve the footing. Valentine guessed what the big red plastic switch at the reel end was. He turned it on and touched the end to a rock. Valentine smelled ozone. Cattle prod. Valentine slung his rifle and took two from the greenlit sockets, wondering if the Miskatonic had tested electricity on a live Reaper. Of course, had someone suggested they try it on Blake. Valentine whirled. An arachnophobe's nightmare stood framed by the desert stars, brighter than ever when contrasted with the cave mouth. Shock turned it into a Picasso sketch of limbs and stingers and spines, and Valentine found himself backpedaling, throwing the steel bulk of the locker between himself and the creature, his illuminated prods waving in front of him like drunken fireflies. It paid him no more attention than it did the locker next to it, and clattered down the hole. It had six spiny legs, three to a side, and two arms, though perhaps they were vestigial wings, as they swept up and out, folded, and were tipped with a sharp curved point. Its head, Valentine didn't know what else to call the front end, resembled a big tongue more than anything, and held a limp, wide-eyed sheep in thousands of mushroom-like organs coating its underside, a carpet of organic Velcro. Whatever it was, it didn't have a strong defend-the-nest instinct. Valentine wondered if the result would have been different if it weren't already carrying a sheep. Were these some big version of the sand bugs the Kurians used to kill the Trekkers' cattle in Nebraska? Valentine said the kind of prayer typically uttered in atheist-free foxholes and followed it down. The motion of its legs fascinated him as it negotiated the slope with ease, using the tiniest of projections from the cave wall as steps. The cave ceiling came down low enough that Valentine had to crouch. Red glinted in the dim light of the LEDs on the cattle prods. What Valentine's brain identified as a big rat turned into a little six-legged creeper. It shot out of a crack toward him, wing limbs telegraphing a code he couldn't begin to understand. Valentine put his prod between himself and the explorer. It scurried off. The cavern opened up and there was a dim electrical lighting ahead, or perhaps an opening to the moon and stars. Valentine found himself crouching in a much larger cavern, curving off into the darkness and other chambers like a cow's stomach, lit here and there by panels that gave off a faint yellow glow from behind thick screens. He could feel a presence overhead. He saw dozens of sacks hanging there, reminding him of a laundry he'd patronized in New Orleans with its rows of canvas bags hanging from the conveyors. Valentine saw a sheep hoof sticking out of one, an emaciated human hand hanging from another. Some of the bags hung from long stems, others shorter, and the scientific bit of Valentine's mind observed that the shape of the sacks turned into a more regular teardrop the closer they got to the floor. Fat, white, worm-like creatures fixed their mouths to the lowest hanging bags and suckled there. Something vast, glistening, and dark moved among the bags at the ceiling. Valentine moved forward cautiously, careful of where he placed his feet. A shriveled teardrop of a bag was visible in the dim light. It was next to another empty stem, cut neatly off. A faint, sweet, corruptive odor came from the bag, but it wasn't the smell that fascinated him. It was the curious, shiny weave of the bag.
Reaper cloth.
These creatures produced, wove even, a rough version of the fabric. Valentine was tempted to chop off the nearly empty teardrop, but he had to find Hornbreed. Valentine searched the walls and ceilings, waving the LEDs at the end of his prods, probing corners. He explored deeper into the cave.
Shit!
Valentine stood face to face with Hornbreed's upturned face. Dozens of the smaller creepy crawlies were passing the pilot up a living conveyor belt to the ceiling, where the shadowed mass rubbed its limbs against one another expectantly. Sightless eyes looked past him into darkness. A line of drool ran out of the corner of Hornbreed's mouth.
Sorry, Equality.
Valentine lifted the cattle prod, moving it toward the pilot's buttocks. Hornbreed's body convulsed and slipped away as its handlers broke contact or had their pincers torn loose by the muscle spasm. The white larva humped away into the barely lit corners. Valentine stood face to face with insectoid death. The arachnid's eyes glittered like gemstones in the reflections of the LEDs on his prods. The two upper front limbs on the hunter-gatherer struck down and forward. Barbed stingers missed as Valentine dived out of the way. He spun back, raising his prods ahead of him. He was squared off with the hunter-gatherer, keeping its eye clusters toward him. The red tip of the tongue carrier retreated farther into its forebody. Valentine lunged for the red mark like a dueling musketeer. The hunter-gatherer collapsed, legs twitching. Valentine's world whirled as he was jerked off his feet by jointed arms that enfolded him in a firm, irresistible, yet gentle embrace. The second arachnid's twin stingers pinched him at his chest but couldn't penetrate, emptying themselves uselessly on his leathers. The prod he'd just used fell where his feet had been a second before. Valentine struck wildly behind him with his other prod. He convulsed as the current traveled up the hunter-gatherer's limbs and across his chest. His heart pounding in shock, Valentine writhed on the ground, suddenly at war with his body. None of his limbs seemed to remember how to function. Valentine managed a roll toward Hornbreed.
What the cur is this?
Can you walk?
Look at my back. It feels like there's about 2 kilos of flesh ripped out.
Hornbreed came to one knee, turning. Valentine saw a purpurant swelling at the pilot's right shoulder blade. He guessed that the welt was the size of a dinner plate.
You got stung by one of those bastards.
Valentine's body was back under control, and he felt strangely calm and placid. The bugs weren't so bad, just little machines doing their jobs. He managed to slow his heart, then retrieved his rifle. Some of the Christmas tree ornaments above rocked as the roof creature shifted.
Is that thing a...
That's what it looks like.
Valentine flicked on the gunlight. Saw ring after ring of arms around a lipless, spiny orifice.
Christ, it's as big as a whale!
It was a zeppelin of a body behind. Long, thin arms that couldn't possibly support that mass. He nearly froze, but his trigger finger seemed possessed of its own will, seeking individual preservation against an overwhelmed brain. The worm accepted the bullets with nothing more than the stiffening of a few of the arms around its central orifice.
Get the hell out of here.
Valentine grabbed Hornbreed by the shoulder, pulling him up and along. He half-carried the pilot in a stumble toward the exit, carbine in its sling bouncing against his plated leathers.
Just leave me in peace, Sergeant.
Shut up and keep moving.
Valentine made it to the locker and grabbed another prod and was tempted to use it on Hornbreed to calm the pilot down. Instead, he half-carried him out of the cave and to his pack. The cold night air and open sky acted on Valentine like a refreshing dip in a pool. His limbs tingled and his skin felt delightfully alive.
My whole friggin' body's throbbing. Sears like a hot frying pan. Put a bullet through my head for Kerr's sake.
Valentine retrieved his little razor-edged kidney puncher of a knife from his boot sheath. A splotch of red marked the center of the bulge on Hornbreed's back like a misplaced nipple. He ran his fingers over the blister the hunter-gatherer's venom had raised.
Ah!
It could be worse. Those things have two stingers. Hold on now.
A lot of liquid was trying to get out. Valentine held the sagging Hornbreed down with his knee and nicked the blister. Valentine squeezed hot, clear fluid from the wound. He dusted the wound with antibiotic powder. He grabbed two pain pills from his pack. Valentine recognized the odd little hexagonal shapes from his wisdom teeth extraction, courtesy of a Southern Command dentist, and wished he'd gotten morphine instead.
Take these.
Doesn't burn so bad anymore.
Good, because I think we should get going. Still want to be left to your fate?
I want a long, cool drink at the mezcal. Ice, a whole bag full.
Better get back to the cactus stand.
About halfway down the mountain, it occurred to Valentine that there had been a yellow rubberized box or two in the locker at the cave mouth that he hadn't investigated. For all he knew, they contained electrical tools. But if the Kurians had some kind of anti-venom, that would be the place to store it. But then it might be dosed for those big mountain grogs. Bugprod ready against another appearance of a hunter-gatherer, Valentine traced a route that carried them well away from stands of bush and sandy washes. In Nebraska's cattle country, he'd once been stung by a smaller creature that could dig, and he still wasn't sure exactly how the beasties hunted. When they reached the cactus stand, Hornbreed collapsed atop his survival blanket.
Enough. Enough. I'm done.
I want to get further away from that cave. Come on, bud. Up!
Can't. Muscles won't work.
Hornbreed managed to drag an arm under himself even as he protested. Valentine sorted through Hornbreed's gear, took medical supplies and water, the flare pistol and signaling mirror. The rest would have to stay behind. Hornbreed was a big man. Valentine could carry him, but he would have to stop and rest frequently, and a few hours would exhaust him utterly. His bad leg started up a preemptive ache at the thought. They'd never make the highway. A drag might be possible if... the wreck. Valentine felt the flyer's pulse, which was regular but fast. He picked Hornbreed up in a fireman's carry and thanked creation they'd be going downhill. When Valentine managed to get Hornbreed back to the crash site, he had hid the man inside the rear cabin of the plane, closed the door, and went back for his pack. With that done, he surveyed the area. The fuselage was intact. If only one of the rear wings had come off, it would make a good sled. Doors. The hinges were designed to come apart easily. All you had to do was pull a pin. Even better, a broken piece of landing gear could be used in an improvised wheelbarrow. He tore up some cargo netting, clipped his light to the higher of the two wings, and went to work, careful to keep the Steyr within reach. It was in the deep night of pre-dawn by the time Valentine finished the makeshift wheelbarrow.
This isn't the most comfortable ride.
It'll do the job. We're out of here, Hornbreed. What now?
That can't be good.
It's the Jaguars. Stones!
Stones didn't leave a telltale muzzle flash to shoot back at. Valentine practically threw the pilot through the plane's rear hatch. Pain shot down Valentine's back just below the shoulder blade. He dived in beside Hornbreed. A shadow appeared outside the hatch. Valentine marked a tangle of dirty hair held in place by a broad headband. Valentine could smell wood smoke and a flicker near the co-pilot's window. A figure with a flaming torch leaned down towards the smashed window, and Valentine jerked his gun towards it.
Hang in there, quality.
A knife blade stabbed in through a smashed window, and Valentine fell back. A hand appeared as one of the Jaguars tried to hoist himself in.
The hell is that?
It's the pickup chopper.
tracer lit up the pinkening dawn, bright shards of yellow rain from the sky. Glancing carefully through one of the fuselage's busted windows, Valentine could see the outline of scattering warriors. He risked a better glance, spotting a big bulbous desert tan fuselage, a greenhouse of glass at the front, red and green running lights, and a uniformed gunner at an oversized door at the side. Valentine grabbed his clip light and began signaling to the craft. They might not know the old Quisling Coastal Marine distress code, but the gunner swerved his crosshairs away from the flipped aircraft. The men tumbled out of the helicopter. Valentine could see a spotter plane overhead, turning tight circles around the crash site. Hornbreed waved Valentine out the door.
Bradley! Bradley!
Where's Hornbreed?
Right here!
Valentine watched as the medic dragged Hornbreed from the wreck. Another soldier ran up, carrying a litter.
Forget that damn thing. I'm riding with my friend here. Max, help me on the bird of paradise. We'll be in Yuma in time for cocktails.
Flying Circus, Yuma, Arizona. The old Colorado River steamboat stop grew up under three flags, Spanish, Mexican, and finally the Stars and Stripes, after the territory was acquired in the Gadsden Purchase. Famous after the Civil War mostly for its territorial prison, it became an important military hub and storage center thanks to its dry climate, ideal for testing and storing hardware of various kinds, and the premier Marine Corps pilot training center. Under the Aztlan Cur, an association of like-minded Curians covering northern Mexico and the southwestern United States called the Confederation by the locals, it's still a city that breeds pilots. The more mundane Aztlan air carriers shuttle Quisling dignitaries and churchmen from post to post and fly police patrols. But the much more colorful Flying Circus of airborne mercenaries with their distinctive winged rattlesnake insignia is what people usually refer to when speaking of the flyers of the Southwest. In typical Curian fashion, Pip's Flying Circus is divided into three centers for better control. Most of the flyers and their families live in Yuma, in well-guarded, gated communities. Their amenities are so plentiful that it's hard to recognize them as hostages to their good behavior. Airplane storage and maintenance is located at the famous aircraft graveyard at the old Davis-Monthan Air Force Base, now just called Lucky Field by the ground staff, thanks to the job security it affords, and DM by the flyers. Pip's operational headquarters is in Tempe, where orders are received from the Curians and planes are armed and staged for their various missions. No one group of officers and no one Curian really commands the circus, though all think of their titular figurehead commander as the unit's boss. There's an air of ringmaster flamboyance to their beloved Pip. Patrick Yanez Powell is the sort of man who stands out in a crowd, not always an advantage that leads to survival in the Curian order. With his round-brimmed black felt Navajo hat, river guide sandals, gold earrings and necklaces, often grease-stained denim flight suit, and elaborately beaded shoulder rig for his ivory-handled peacemaker, he's easy to pick out in a crowd. Though on the ugly side of 50, he still moves with a spring in his step, and he's hard to follow as he changes direction the instant he spots anything from flaking paint to litter to a misplaced tool. An adjutant usually carries a bag for such trash that blows across Pip's transom, which will then be upended on some unfortunate lieutenant's desk. Valentine's long trip had begun in the noisy vibration of the helicopter, was briefly suspended at a refueling stop at a service strip where they shoveled down a quick meal of eggs and sausage. After breakfast, they were both dusted with some kind of disinfectant insecticide. Then it was back in the beater until another landing at the sprawling airbase in Tucson, where they switched to a tiny, cramped prop plane for the final leg, which left Valentine tired and disoriented. Other than his astonishment over the distance they traveled in just a few hours, he also felt nauseous with fatigue. Valentine had wanted cool and darkness when they arrived at Yuma. That wasn't in the cards. The soldiers threw their dunnage in a propane-powered flatbed and whisked Hornbreed, Valentine, and the medic with a clipboard full of notes off to a white building with the traditional Red Cross painted on its roof and walls. Valentine had surrendered his weapons to a pair of desert-camouflaged men with sidearms and blue-banded helmets. Hornbreed had whispered into one of the military policemen's ears, but said little else until they reached the triage room, where he then refused any attention until the MPs showed up again and looped a laminated ID card around Valentine's neck. Then Hornbreed allowed himself to be put in a wheelchair and taken to an operating room.
So long, Max.
Valentine had finally fallen asleep on the paper-covered table of an examining room.
Mr. Argent?
A thin woman, who looked like a hat tree in a lab coat, stethoscope over her shoulder, stood over him. She checked his eyes, lymph nodes, pulse, and temperature.
How do you feel?
Not great, but I'll live.
Drink lots of water. If you want to get cleaned up, you can use the showers in E corridor. Just follow the signs. You can read, right? Wear your ID at all times, even in the shower. There's a staff commissary in that wing, too. Eat a couple of bananas. You're on unlimited rations for 3 days, so enjoy. Don't skimp on the veggies. Room 3 is cleared.
What about equality?
Wing leader Hornbreed's doing fine. He's staying here for observation overnight. Check with the base security by the admitting door, and they'll find you a bunk. You'll probably be here until we release the wing leader.
The night passed quickly. He slept so hard that he woke up uncharacteristically groggy. Valentine cleaned himself and felt better, but still bleary, when a pot-bellied example of base security presented himself. The corporal looked him over as though wanting to arrest him on general principles, but eventually informed him that his reward was being arranged.
Old Pip's on the way. He wants to see you in the wing leader.
Valentine wondered if there was a young Pip, or if the phrase, with its poetic evocation of Tempus Fugit, indicated some measure of endearment.
Mind if I grab a meal first?
Just don't be long about it. He's a busy man. We don't want to be running around looking for you.
The corporal's eyes betrayed a hint of jealousy as he watched Valentine pile his tray with some dubious-looking meat and gravy, potatoes, fruit, and rice buns. The corporal settled for a thick slice of bread smeared with protein paste and water.
Enjoy. We've been on ration cards for over a year.
Trust me, I know what it's like. Hope that tastes better than it looks.
They say it's refried beans. Tastes like they scraped it off a dumpster.
Dig into mine.
You sure?
Go for it.
You're a real guapo, Mr. Argent.
Why the food shortage?
Trouble's out east. We just took a bunch of California farmland, thanks to the circus. But it's taking time to get organized. Headhunters down south are having a tougher time finding peons to work the land. This territory used to be Frolic City. Pip's circus brought in a lot of in-kind trade from the gulag. Now, we're fighting to hold our own.
Here's to better days.
Valentine held up a cup of watery juice. The corporal raised his water. The corporal removed some gravy with his heel of bread.
If you're looking to set up an establishment somewhere comfy with your reward...
I haven't thought that far ahead, friend.
The corporal had pulled up a chair outside of Hornbreed's office, allowing Valentine to enter on his own. Valentine had immediately moved to the large window, which took in most of the airfield. Gliders circled far above, featherless hawks on the air currents. He watched as a twin-engine prop with 5 fiberglass baby planes in tow taxied below.
What are all the gliders for?
Pilot training. You learn most of the principles of flight and it saves a lot of gas.
Looks fun.
Just say the word and I'll... Sir!
Patrick Inez Powell had darkish but freckled skin, a boxer's squashed nose, and ears like a pair of beat-up trash can lids. Valentine didn't know what to make of the variegated uniform. The gold necklace, dungaree overalls, and shoulder holster made him look like a motor pool inventory guard called away from a good card game, but the round black felt hat added a serious note. Valentine envied the sandals, though. They looked cool and comfortable.
You got a minute, Horny?
Always.
You dumb son of a bitch. I told you Roquette wasn't fit to get home. You had to be a hero and make it or go down with the ship.
Got her in range of the salvage bird.
Yeah, we'll have to invent a new medal for you. You got all the others. Just park it for now. I brought you a present. Fresh from the Cali dairy. Still a little warm from the cow.
Thanks, sir. You're a wonder.
Ah...
You know what I like.
Milkman.
Is this our stray herder?
He got me out of a dark hole. Almost punched out doing it.
Well, thank you, young man. Call me Pip.
Max.
Good with his gun and cool in a hot box. We could sure use him.
I'm flattered, but I'm more interested in the reward.
Whoa, I'm sorry to hear that. But don't worry, you'll get it in full.
Your jackets say the reward is non-negotiable. Is that firm?
Hey, Max.
Son, most of the fellers who want to haggle don't hand over the pilot first. You're either dumb or impractical.
Well, I didn't mean the amount. I meant the type. Does it have to be gold?
What? You want something lighter? We can look into gems.
Nothing like that. I was wondering if I could trade the reward for a ride in one of your planes.
Where you want to go? Japan? You're screwing yourself, son.
Gold just brings trouble. I've got family on a patch of land up toward Canada. I'd like a ride up there.
Easily done. We've got a friendly field in northern Utah.
Thanks.
You'll find a little gratitude goes a long way. We'll put you in the VIP jet if you like.
Throw in some flying lessons and we'll call it a deal.
Well, I'm not sure a man who turns down mint gold should be working a stick and rudder, but we'll oblige. Horny, you tell Alvarez to arrange some privates.
I'll take him up myself, Pip. The wing's going to be down for a while anyway.
Now, that's the other thing. We're going to have to dummy up for a week or so and make you look operational. There's a purification drive.
Oh, hell.
What's a purification drive?
Looks like you haven't spent much time in the Confederation.
They could show any day.
Get my boots, huh?
Valentine took a short joyride his first evening. A young instructor named Starguide offered him the chance to watch a sunset from just beneath the clouds.
Ready to take over? Absolutely! Like with most everything, first time's the best. Pick a spot on the horizon and keep her level. Don't be afraid. I'm here. Small, gentle movement. You just have her for a few minutes. It's getting dark.
Valentine took the controls. The plane waggled a little and settled down.
You've got good hands for this, Sergeant. Yeah, I bet you say that to all the boys. Dude, don't even joke about it. You don't want to rep as a rainbow chaser. Pilot culture is muy macho.
After the exhilaration of a night landing, with the airfield lights changing speed and perspective until they touched down with the softest of bumps, Starguide filled out some paperwork. He then took Valentine toward Yuma on a spring-worn shuttle bus. They stopped well outside of town at a cavernous wooden restaurant where Hornbreed waited, watching while some musicians set up. A petite, caramel-skinned woman with cheekbones and jawline as sharp as a hunting arrow sat beside Hornbreed, resting her hand on his arm, loving but not overly demonstrative.
Any news?
No sign of them yet, Starguide. Maybe they'll skip us and concentrate on the out there.
That'll be the day.
Valentine looked around the place. A big U of a room, with pillars where he guessed dividing walls once stood, surrounded the bar. Doors to the kitchen were on one side, to the washrooms on another. A stairway at the side had a blue neon arrow zigzagging up and the legend Wild Blue Yonder in cloud-scrolled letters.
Argent, welcome to the Mezcal. Best liquor and music between the L.A. slime pits and Austin holdout. This is my wife, Louisa.
I'm just, like, so grateful to you.
That's the sound of California class. But she fell for a dashing pilot and joined me in the wasteland.
Just like the movies.
What can I get you all?
I think I owe you a drink, Argent.
Whatever you're having.
It's milk. I don't drink.
Well, make mine milk, then.
Not another one. Make mine a beer.
Louisa?
Just water for now.
Two milks, a water, and a beer. Coming right up.
Starguide went to the bar and yanked a piece of plastic off a peg. He returned just as the drinks arrived, setting it on Valentine's head. It was a kid's toy hat, spray-painted silver, with wings that swept up and back.
A joker, eh, Starguide?
What can I say? I'm a work-hard, play-hard type. Cheers!
Why the milk, Hornbreed?
My folks were sort of fitness fanatics.
Valentine knew better than to inquire further about their health. One never asked about relatives in the Kurian zone, especially when the past tense was employed. Instead, he watched customers stream in.
Kick it, George!
Place is gonna be full tonight.
A few couples left the bar and began to dance. Valentine recognized one of the pilots from the rescue helicopter stomping away in elaborately stitched pointed toe boots. He eyed the band's zebra-haired singer. She was clad in a silver mesh bikini and matching strappy cork-heeled sandals, rattlesnake tattoos winding down each arm, and a Chinese ideograph on her back. She'd applied makeup with an airbrush, giving her bright, intense eyes wings like a pit viper's. She shambled like a ravy, about to keel over. Her thin arms waved hypnotically as she passed her microphone first to one hand, then the other. Valentine looked around, a little shocked at the explicit lyrics. But maybe musicians could sing what no one dared say.
Hiya, Cherry.
A girl in fishnets and feathers, a swan-shaped black bottle nestled under one netted breast, put down a shot glass in front of him.
Jolt the swan neck on the house.
I'm not drinking.
He's already at half staff. No assistance required.
The woman planted the bottle at the center of the table, put a hand on each of Valentine's shoulders, and did a brief bump and grind.
You want to go upstairs? Ready, willing, and free of charge.
No thanks.
Ha ha, the follies of youth. You should take advantage of the newbie's wings, one night only.
Sorry, not interested.
Well, suit yourself, sugar.
So, Hornbreed, what was the fighting up in Colorado about?
Those jokers are trying to starve us by cutting off the Colorado River. We took out the dams.
Must have been big bombs.
Nah, demolition teams. It was more an air mobile operation. Ever since that fiasco in 50, we use our own troops on the ground if we have to land anything. Damn grogs flapped off as soon as things got a little hot.
Valentine wondered if the Korean Year 50 fiasco was the operation at Love Field in Dallas. His old regiment, the Razors, had been so battered by the aerial pounding, Southern Command had broken it up. But he wasn't about to make Hornbreed feel better by saying so. Odd that he felt more like shaking the man's hand than ever. The aerial assault had been well coordinated and deadly.
From the rigs of Catalina.
Don't let the rationing fool you, Argent. This is a profound crash. You never hear a hisser unless you're riding a desk at GHQ. We run our own lives. We get...
A rattlesnake-decorated arm cut Starguide off as the singer wrapped herself around Valentine's back.
Max.
Let's wrap it for the circus's newest hero, Max!
The singer hopped up and planted her thong-divided buttocks on the bar table, resting her sandaled foot firmly on Valentine's crotch. Valentine watched her eyeballs rattle around and decided she was a little stoned. Valentine moved his face toward hers, lifting her leg out of the way. He used the leverage to throw her slight body over his shoulder.
This one I'm taking up!
My set's not over, you bastard!
Now she'll be back after a brief intermission.
The singer half-heartedly punched Valentine in the small of his back. Two pipeline-armed men in leather vests, probably bouncers, appeared at the front of the crowd, but made no attempt to move towards Valentine. A big, cushioned wooden lounge chair and a double bed almost filled the little paneled room. Sponge-painted clouds gave the room a nursery feel. A single bulb in an orange and blue Chinese lantern gave the room a grotto glow. There was a rag rug on the floor, and a pair of towels next to a wash basin and an empty pitcher on a little shelf.
Classy.
Oh, fucker, you could ask him.
I will. What's your name?
Gide. Be careful with my face, okay? Rough stuff will mess up the makeup. I know it's traditional to keep the pants as a souvenir, but these were...
Gide, you can keep them on. I just want to talk.
What, like, dirty?
No. One of those songs. The one about the attic. It struck me as odd. Aren't you afraid of saying stuff like that?
Got a light?
I don't smoke.
They sneak in condoms all the time, but can they leave a match? Dream deferred.
You wrote that song?
Yeah, you hot shits could use a bite of reality. It got a response, you saw.
What's a purification?
It's not my place.
Please, I'm new here. I mean, call me Max if you like. I brought in Wing Leader Hornbreed. I'm wondering if I should grab my reward and run while the getting's good.
You got your gold yet?
I'm working on it. I'm trading most of it for a trip far away.
Purification's headcount reduction. A lot of times it makes no sense who gets chosen.
Who does it? Churchmen?
Yeah, the church handles it.
Ever worry that your songs might get you purified?
Fuck no, I think they like having me around. They need a place for the zips to let off a little steam. The mezcal is sort of cathartic.
Sort of what?
Catharsis. Healthy elimination of emotion, like a big ball and shit into the toilet alive.
Singer and philosopher.
My old man was a cowhand, but that doesn't mean he was dumb. Always had a book or two tucked away, and he read to me a lot. Grew up in the saddle with the rifle instead of a doll. Killed a mountain lion when I was 8.
Well, if you can shoot, why didn't you join the service?
I'd be tempted to pull the trigger with the gun pointed the other way.
Valentine studied her tattoos. The snakes were posed differently. The left arm seemed to be striking. The right wrapped itself protectively around her upper arm and watched the world from the soft spot on her forearm.
How far away from here are you going?
About 1,000 miles north.
Take me with? I can work off my expenses, or we can arrange something. I ain't exactly a virgin, but I'm healthy and horny on my own account, not just to keep my job. I'll fuck you like Scheherazade, not some high-mileage brothel cunt.
I'm tempted just for the conversation.
Make fun. Who are you to talk to me like that?
I was hoping to figure that out on this trip. How do you survive a purification?
No telling what sets him off. But I'd cover that limp if I were you. Life is precarious for the lame and halt. I don't suppose you're a big shot somewhere and you're just keeping your brass ring hid?
No such luck. How can I get in touch with you?
I live above Ling's Market in Yuma. I help him stalk after a gig, then I sleep out the day, but don't be afraid to wake me up, know what I mean?
I look forward to the rest of your set.
Wait. Undo your hair.
Valentine unwound the thick rubber band that kept his hair out of the way. Gide stood. Her metallic nailed fingers ran through his hair, tousling it.
Oh, you got 3 gray hairs. Just a little lipstick smear. Someone might wonder why you carried me up here to talk. Though I ought to give you a black eye.
Thanks for the advice, Gide.
What about my offer?
Under consideration. But if I bring you, it'll be for your trigger finger, not for the 1,001 nights.
You've done some reading, too.
Haven't had the time lately.
And what was that for? My makeup's already fucked.
Gratitude. Lone man's dilemma. I was beginning to think all these flyboys were the sane ones and I was the nut.
Valentine had surveyed the growing crowd in the bar and decided to join some of the smokers outside. Masses of people and noise made him tense and headachy. People sat on old car seats and lawn chairs, drinking and smoking and looking at the stars. In the shadows, couples kissed. Cigarette smoke, stars, and the occasional eager moan turned above Valentine as he stargazed. Were women aware of their strange healing power? He felt the wounds begin to close, but nothing. Not Gide, not Blake, not even the satisfaction that would come with a successful assignment could replace his daughter.
Never should have made that trip.
How's that, Max? You regretting popping off into the sage to get me back?
Didn't see you. No, different trip 2 years ago. Just as soon not talk about it.
Suit yourself. How'd you like your flight?
Loved it, but I still want my reward.
We're always short planes, but it'll be arranged. You'll go fast and in style. We'll tack on an extra day or two to maintenance and put the fuel use down to testing. Tomorrow, I'll set you down with some workbooks. You need to learn a few principles, and then maybe you'll go up in a 2-seat glider.
You worried about some purifiers showing up?
I keep my nose clean. Worst thing you can do is get all nervous about it. They see you stammering and sweating, they figure a guilty conscience is showing itself.
I know what you mean.
They might not even show. The higher-ups are more worried about the food situation. They'll probably concentrate on aggro in California and Mexico.
I'd just as soon get going.
We're still gonna give you a couple thousand in gold, you know. That's gotta be arranged for.
How you feeling?
Better. Whatever juice the bugs put in me, I think it's about worked its way out. Just sore as hell. You're bunking in our house tonight, by the way. Let's go over to the hospital and sign for your gear. It sits there too long, someone might decide to sell it.
I'm ready to go.
Hornbreed's home was just shy of some of the estates in Iowa. The imposing, Spanish-style house lacked only the expansive grounds to be a true manor. Instead, it sat on a small plot of land in a gated community filled with other equally impressive houses. Louisa gave Valentine a pleasant little room of his own on the central courtyard, where he could look up at the master suite's second-floor balcony.
Who's there?
Breakfast in kitchen.
Valentine relaxed at the sight of a pretty Asian teenage girl in an apron bringing morning coffee. Real coffee at that. After the strictly portioned meal, Hornbreed showed him the neighborhood. There was a swimming pool, a school, and a small golf course, a private store, and a common garage where the favored families checked out vehicles.
Most of the people in these parts rarely go beyond the gates. Necessities get brought in.
There are a lot of kids here.
Staff children. They're really not supposed to be here, but no one complains.
What about the kids who are supposed to be using it?
Most of our kids go to church school or private academies. Class all morning, sports in the afternoon, and tutoring or apprenticeships at night. Really first-class schooling. Tumlo next door has a daughter already beginning medical training, and she's only 15. We gotta get to the field, but we're making one more stop. I've got something to show you.
He said no more until they reached one of the more remote hangars on the big airfield. Hornbreed maneuvered his Volkswagen around piles of junk, engines hanging from chains, and racks of assorted rusting spares. It was half junkyard, half machine shop, worked by men with overalls and close-cropped hair in their last days. Hornbreed parked in the shade inside the hangar.
This is sort of a private workshop. The men here aren't paid by the circus or AAC. The pilots keep them to work on their private craft. Hey, Jimmy.
The man who trotted up had a huge pouch of tobacco in his cheek. His hands had a fascinating patina. The oil had worked itself into every crevice. He wiped them on a rag before shaking hands with Hornbreed. Jimmy looked at Valentine's ID card. An aluminum can with a rubber lid hung around his neck.
Is this a bounty man?
Max Argent.
You got a lift all the way back to Yuma. Sure didn't do much for that gold. I could have done that.
You didn't face down any 10-foot monsters. He did. Where's the crate, Jimmy? Hope you haven't put it in the same spot as your manners.
Just speaking my mind, sir. Pass just over here.
Jimmy led them past a couple of fixed-gear prop planes and to a little contraption in the bright colors of a yellow jacket that looked like a wheeled two-man bobsled under an oversized beach umbrella missing its fabric. It had a big prop sticking out the back.
This is a personal advanced aerial transport. It's an autogyro, Max. Just about my favorite toy for flying out over the dunes. Seats two and some personal cargo. She's a fun little ship and can run on ordinary high-octane gasoline. Twin rudders, pretty safe as long as you watch the weather, and if you stow your gear in to balance the load. Can take off from a cleared field, and if the engine conks out, you just rotate back down.
What works the rotors? All I see is a control mechanism. Or is there an axle hidden in there?
Forward velocity. Air resistance keeps the rotors spinning, and they give lift. That's where it's different from a helicopter. You can't hover, and you need takeoff room. Engine's 110 horsepower, and you can engage a driver that works the wheels so it's a motorized tricycle, too. There's pretty good ground clearance. This thing was the Range model.
All yours?
No. She's yours now.
But you're kidding.
Nope. It's a thank you for going into that hole after me. Most men wouldn't have.
Most men don't like seeing an Archon's ransom disappearing down a big rat hole either.
Maybe. Maybe not.
Don't know how to thank you.
I still got my Air Ranger, Argent. You're getting the kitty toy.
Well then, what are we waiting for? Let's take her up.
Duty calls. And you've got some workbooks to get through? I'll be checking your math at lunch.